everyone, and welcome. This is episode 313 of Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers podcast, part of the MKE Tailgate Network. I'm James, joined by Ryan, and we've got Spencer Michaelis with us again this week to kind of break down some of the minor moves the Brewers made. It's been kind of quiet on the Brewers front, but Brewers got a pitcher back, so that means we have to ask Spencer about that. So before we get to that, Spencer, how are you doing on this weekend?
Doing pretty well. Been a pretty quiet weekend so far, so nice to actually have a little time to relax.
That's definitely true, and we're giving Paul a little bit of time to relax too. He's been super busy. Ryan, how are you doing? I know you've got all your eyes set on the big soccer match coming up later today as we do this on Sunday morning.
Yeah, hopefully Liverpool Manchester United game at Anfield will go like last year's did, which was a 7-0 beatdown, which was that was something special. And they were only up 1-0 at the half, too, and they scored late in the first half. And then the second half was just sheer joy and utter embarrassment for Manchester United, which that's what they get.
Sounds good. Well, fingers crossed a similar result for you, just for your own happiness. But let's kind of get into things. Mostly a question-driven episode, just given the lack of Brewers news this week. A reminder, you get question priority when you become a patron at patreon.com/MKETailgate. That's $2 a month that gets you that question priority, both on this podcast and on the Reporting as Eligible Packers podcast. $5 a month gets you that perk plus the additional exclusive content, including the Minor League Extra with Ryan and James Anderson of RotoWire, as well as Paul's Packers mini pods, which have been spot on lately. And Ryan, you were saying you and James are hoping to record something before the end of the new year here.
Yeah, we're going to get something worked out. Those of you who follow him or the Tailgate account on Twitter know that James is a proud new father. So
yeah, congrats, James.
Yeah, so we kind of planned this in advance. We're going to do something in that week between Christmas and New Year's when we can get together and make that work. So we will do that. And we're going to need your questions for that one, because I don't know exactly what there even is to discuss this time. I feel like we maybe used up too much material last time with our supersized episode. So we're going to need help from questioners. So be ready for those minor league questions and have those ready to really be able to carry us, because we're going to need it.
You guys are going to have to pace yourselves for sure. All right. Reminder too, even if you're not a patron, you can support us another way. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you're listening to this right now. Give us a 5-star review and a follow. And while you're there, share it with your friends. Tell people about us too, especially in this off-season time. Good time to introduce people to us as well. As I mentioned, it's a mostly quiet week for the Brewers. They did, I guess, take advantage of the Royals' need to open up a spot on their 40-man roster, given, you know, their spending spree this winter.
Who knew, right? Who knew that the Royals were gonna do that? I was joking on Twitter that it feels very much like what the Padres did, except like the bargain bin version of it, where they're just right. Giving money to whoever will take it. Like, here, you want to come play for us? Here, take some money. And like, hopefully it's a little bit better thought out than that, but man, I don't feel like the Royals have the infrastructure to make any of this really work, and that this is very much going to be a major disappointment for a fan base that has had numerous, they've had 600 lost seasons this century. I mean, it's absurd. So much more than anybody else has had. Yeah, they had that World Series, and the year before they went to the World Series and lost it.
Right.
Those were two of three seasons over 500 the entire century.
Right. Yeah. It's been a rough stretch, and Bobby Witt only covers so much goodwill in that organization. I don't know. Guys like Seth Lugo and Will Smith, old friend, coming along. Mike Brasso, they signed to a minor league contract. That's fun. On some extent, you kind of want the small market teams like the Royals to kind of do this, at least spend a little bit of money instead of just sitting the entire thing out. But we'll see how well that works out for them. In the meantime, they did have to clear some space, as we mentioned. So reliever Taylor Clark going to the Brewers in exchange for right-handed pitcher Ryan Brady and infielder Cam Devaney. Obviously wasn't a great year for Clark. He's coming off a 5.95 ERA and only has a couple years left to go before free agency. he does still have an option. So, you know, we were talking the other week about kind of the lack of optionable bullpen options, so to speak, for the Brewers. So I guess this kind of helps. But this is, again, where we turn to Spencer and say, hey, anything here?
Yeah, actually, I was last offseason, because I was just trying to find different ways the Brewers could improve, I was looking at Clark as somebody they might be interested in, because he had a much lower FIP than ERA. His Baseball Savant page looked pretty interesting, and he just kind of looked like a guy who might break out. And then he went the exact opposite direction when he got into the actual 2023 season and had just an awful season. And I would say, for me, anytime I see a pitcher on the Royals struggle, I have to look deeper than that, because this is just an awful pitching development organization. I mean, if you're comparing them between the Royals and the Brewers, it's, you're going kind of from the outhouse to the penthouse, because it's a big, big difference. And if you look deeper, I mean, first of all, 2022, if you look at any of that, you could see a guy who was pretty interesting. His strikeout rate was going up from what it had been with the Diamondbacks. His, like I said, he just greatly underperformed what his FIP was. And that Royals team was a terrible defensive team in 2022. In 2023, all of that kind of went away, and you didn't see nearly as much to dream on. But the big thing, and I know Kurt Hoge tweeted this out, and that's where I saw it, but his slider ranked in the 91st percentile in out-of-zone whiff percentage, but it was only thrown out of the zone at a 9th percentile clip, meaning he was just leaving it in the zone way too often. And whenever he would get it out of the zone, he was getting a lot of swing and miss, and Kurt even clarified that that whiff rate was on total pitches thrown out of the zone, not just on swings out of the zone. So anytime he got it out of there, he was getting a ton of chase, a ton of swing and miss. To me, that just says the Brewers are going to try and dive into that deeper and use that more often, make sure he's getting it out of the zone more often, and use it as a put-away pitch, but also a pitch just to get ahead in counts. Use it as like his primary pitch would be my guess. And then the fastball, it's interesting, because if you look at it, it has decent qualities. It shouldn't get hit like it does, but it gets destroyed. It gets crushed. And it makes me wonder, I was looking into it, I mean, even on like where you would think it would need to be located, it's getting hit. So I'm not really sure what the issue is.
Now, was that just this last year when the home run rate spiked? Okay. Because I'm wondering, like, looking back, it's a significantly different pitcher in 2022. And the big driver of that seems to be, last year he gave up 1.83 home runs per nine innings. And that's so far out of line with anything else in his career that, like, it just doesn't. Yeah, you're looking at 2022, it was 1.10, 0.83 in 2021. I guess it was up somewhat in when he was still in Arizona, but that's also a smaller sample. So, I don't know. It just, what exactly is going on there is sort of mysterious to me.
Yeah, I'm curious if they're going to try, and I think Jack Stern said this either to me or on Twitter, and I wonder if a cutter might not be in the cards for him, just the way he throws that hard slider, and then trying to find a way around the fastball issues and going to a cutter. I could see them trying to go that route with him, but like we said, it's an optionable arm, and while I kind of like one of the guys they gave up in the trade, I mean, it's a very minimal risk for them and a guy they can tinker with and see what they've got.
Right. We're not talking about top 30 prospects here. And just to clarify on that, those were, I don't have it up in front of me, but it was Cam Devaney. And who was the other one?
Ryan Brady.
Yeah. Oh, Ryan Brady. Okay. And you like Devaney better or you like Brady better?
I could see both of them being major leaguers, but I actually liked Brady. I thought he was a guy we might see in the pen at some point this year.
Okay.
But
again, not still a top 30 guy, just like one of those kind of depth pieces in the organization. Yeah, I mean, this is, it's really kind of interesting. We're going to get to the other guy that they added this year too, or this week too, because they brought in another guy as well. They are really just doing what they do here this winter so far. Their focus has really not been on what they need to this point, which was power hitting, right? Like that's the biggest organizational, like, short-term need here is to add power hitting. What they've instead been really doing to this point is just adding tons and tons and tons of pitching depth and just building that up in such a way that you kind of, you figure that of all these guys they've added, and you can run down the list. I mean, obviously, okay, so Wade Miley and Colin Ray were just guys who are returning, but you run down the rest of the guys and you wonder, you know, one of these guys probably turns into a fairly reasonably reliable reliever this year, if not multiple guys, just with all of the things that they've brought in. And that's what this is. This is a bulk business. They are trying to bring in as many people as they possibly can and let their pitching development staff, which you pointed out, like, this is like going from the outhouse to the penthouse. The Royals have been trying to get better at this. They fired Cal Eldred a couple years ago. They've been working to improve, but still, this has been a real nightmare area for them. They just have not had any luck developing pitchers. And that, I probably shouldn't say luck. This is probably mostly a residue of not digging deep enough, not doing the sorts of things that the Brewers and the other smart organizations in baseball do, which is to really look at things like what the stuff is. And your speculation that, you know, this really good hard slider that, one, he wasn't locating where he should have, he was leaving it in the zone far too much, and that's problematic, and two, that it sort of suggests the idea of potentially adding a cutter to the repertoire to be the pitch that, you know, offsets the slider. That is something that, like, organizations like the Brewers or the Rays or the Dodgers, it's things they do to make pitchers better, to tinker with their stuff, that organizations like the Royals just, you know, they don't do that stuff nearly as effectively, nearly as often. And so that's, like, one of the key advantages that the Brewers have had. It's, you know, more than just about anything, I think it's the reason why the Brewers are on this run for the last, you know, 6 years where they've made the playoffs, you know, five of the six last years. So it's a big part of that.
Yeah. Spencer, I wanted to ask you, especially when it comes to Clark, how much of it was a coaching issue? Because you're right. You look at the Savant page and the 98th percentile chase percentage from last year just jumps off the page. And the whiff percentage too, like you mentioned, 63rd percentile, his fastball velo 64th percentile, averaging almost 95 miles an hour. But like, either is, do you think it's maybe like a tunneling issue or a pitch shape issue, or, you know, kind of going back to, was he just kind of getting poor coaching in Kansas City? And there's something to kind of mine here for the Brewers.
Yeah, I think it definitely plays a role in it. I do think that his command kind of took a step back. If you look at like his location charts last year, he wasn't locating as well. So that doesn't necessarily line up with coaching all the time. Sometimes pitchers just take a step back in that regard. But
sure,
based on what he was doing the year before and the fact that, like you said, he probably should have thrown the slider even more than he did, the fastball even less than he did, and then just not getting it out of the zone. Now, like I said, that could just be him making mistakes over and over, but that seems unlikely. It seems more like he's being coached not to be out of the zone too often. And that's true with some pitches or some types of pitchers. But for a guy like him, who's clearly going to get chases if he goes out of the zone, then he should be out of the zone more often. Like, that's, it's pretty simple in that regard. And I would guess that a good chunk of it came down to just poor coaching and something that could be fixed. I wouldn't say super easily, but relatively easily.
Yeah. The thing I wonder when I hear that a guy had command and then loses it is that somebody tinkered with the mechanics a little bit in a bad way that maybe messed it up. So I wonder if that could be a thing too, that mechanically he got a little bit away from what he had been doing to have success before that, because like you said, the walk rate just really spiked last year.
It skyrocketed. Yeah. It's, I mean, almost like somebody told him to just throw it in the zone because he was walking too many guys, right? Like, that was my read on it. I don't know about
though
you guys.
I guess the other thing is, really, maybe that 3.9% walk rate in 2022, that might be the outlier, because everything else here is 8.1, 11.5, 7.2,
sure, right,
and then 9.0 last year. So maybe he just had a year where, oddly, it came together for him and he wasn't walking people. Maybe guys were swinging at more stuff. outside the zone, or maybe he was just doing that. And then last year he, yeah, I don't know, but it is curious to see what this is. But really the big picture of it is just, this is another, you know, you're throwing spaghetti at the wall here to see what sticks. And the fact that he does have the option is key for this whole thing, because I wouldn't expect him to make the opening day roster. Like, Taylor Clark is almost certainly not going to make the opening day roster, unless there's a bunch of injuries or guys just like forgot how to pitch over the winter from that pretty successful bullpen last year. So I wouldn't expect him to make the opening day roster, but he's definitely a guy that, you know, chances are very strong you're going to see him at some point during the year next year. And the question is just, you know, for how long and in what kind of role.
For sure. Real quick before we move on to questions, another minor move this week. The Brewers signed veteran lefty Rob Zastrzyzny to a minor league deal. Former Cub great Rob Zastrzyzny. I can't even say that. You know, pretty mediocre overall, I think. Was below average last year, most recently with the Pirates. But he's a lefty. Spencer, possible, like, lefty specialist here. You definitely don't want him facing righties based on his career splits.
Yeah, that's probably what you're looking at here. Somebody who's a lefty specialist, which in today's game is pretty hard to actually have on your roster and use. But I think he did make some changes over the last couple of years. His fastball velocity has been going up, especially the last couple of years. He's gone from being more like an 89 to 90 guy to being more in the 92, 93, up to 94 range, which is interesting. He's throwing the fastball a lot less too, which helps, I think, with what he was having a problem with, which was that pitch was just getting crushed early on in his career. I know he added a cutter, or at least he's throwing it a lot more now. And I know he now is throwing a changeup, which in the minors has gotten really, really good, like, contact quality. It's really soft contact quality, which does make me think maybe that was meant to help him against righties. And maybe that will give him a little bit of a chance to get righties out. But like you said, the splits are terrible. He scrapped his curveball. He went to a sweeper, and that got better results in the minors too. But most of his game is just built on, like, soft contact. And I feel like that's where you kind of see the jump from AAA to MLB, is that a lot of hitters struggle with just, like, junk ball type guys in AAA. And when you get to the majors, they don't. They make hard contact against that pitch, even though it worked well against these guys who are just one level below him. That's kind of the big difference, is that off-speed pitches just don't work as well at the majors in general. And I think it's just a depth move again, like we talked about before. It's another guy to throw at the wall and see if it works, and maybe they'll tinker with something. I don't know really where they would go with it, but maybe they use that cutter even more often, try and make that the primary fastball, and go to the changeup a little bit more often, see if he can actually work against righties. But like we said, I think it's a lefty specialist for depth, and
yeah,
worth a shot, but AAA.
Yeah, there's a little something here. Just looking at the overall total number here, he has a 470 career FIP, or sorry, a 470 career ERA, but a 386 career FIP. And remember, FIP has to be taken against runs allowed, not earned runs allowed. So it's even a bigger split than that. So maybe there is some... there's some untapped potential here, though. He's been with a number of smart, good organizations. He's with the Dodgers in 2019. He was with the Marlins in 2021. Like, he's been with organizations that know their pitching and know how to get stuff out of that. Say what you want about the Marlins, they know pitching. Like, they absolutely understand how to do that stuff. So the chance that there's, like, major untapped potential here is low. But what this probably is a guy who at some point during the year, maybe the Brewers have a series or two lined up where there's a particularly large number of, like, left-handed power hitters. And the Brewers say, okay, we're going to put you on the 40 now. You're going to be in the major leagues for, like, a week. We're going to run you out there in some of these games when we're facing a bunch of these power-hitting lefties. And then enjoy probably Kansas City, right? Like at that point, like you're just we're sending you out at that point, and like that'll be it. So yeah, this is pretty close to a just a pure depth, don't think it over too much sort of move. Definitely a lot less here than there is for Clark, which, you know, makes sense because Zastrzewski was signed to a minor league deal. So he's not on the 40 at this point.
All right, let's move on to questions. Jay Google, our first one this week from Patreon, asking, what are your thoughts on the Blue Jays possibly being interested in Christian Yelich? Would you move him for nothing to get out of the contract? Also, how hard did you laugh at the Bleacher Nation post about the Brewers allegedly cheating 5 years ago and still crying about it this past week? Okay, all right, so two things here, right?
Yeah, Ryan. So I gotta take the second part first because it's a little bit of a mischaracterization. Really, what that was, if you go read the article, and it is hilarious, basically the deal was is that they felt that Wilson Contreras was so bad at calling pitches that they were calling pitches from the dugout like this is college baseball, like five right. years ago, like, or I guess 10 years ago, whatever, because this actually happened in 2018. They were calling pitches from the dugout, and the Brewers were not, they weren't using sign stealing or whatever. It was literally
cheating. They just picked it up.
It was right out in the open, and they're like, okay, we know what's happening. And Eric Kratz, this is based on an Eric Kratz interview. He was talking to can't even remember exactly who it was, but it was basically Eric Kratz was talking about how they got really, you know, annoyed when the pitcher would shake off because then they wouldn't know what was going on because they were like, no, we had it before that. So really, this was a situation where it, like, and he sort of, like, the way he wrote the headline, the way Brett Taylor wrote the headline was very much like trying to get our engagement on it. Fine, congratulations, Brett, you won on that. But
proof.
It was,
they finally proved Christian Yelich is a fraud and was cheating,
right?
Even though,
right, but it was out in the open. The actual article, he pretty much stipulates that, yeah, this was right out in the open. It wasn't like the Brewers were doing anything wrong. It was just there. It was more embarrassing for the Cubs than anything else. It, you know, kind of humiliating for Wilson Contreras that, like, because this was supposedly necessary in their minds, that they gave away this big advantage. And you wonder how many other teams figured it out, too, because it's right there in the friggin' open. Other teams had to have picked up on it, right? So that one was just, it's this ongoing thing with Cub fan paranoia about that. Though I will add, Jay's follow-up to that, he had a message in there where he said, you know, really, they should suspend Craig Counsell for this, for being at the helm
exactly.
of what was going on with this Brewers nefarious sign-stealing scheme. So, yeah. The Yelich thing was another one that Jay actually brought this to my attention, and there was a very poorly written article about this, about would it make sense for Christian Yelich to come to the Blue Jays? And
I think John Heyman even floated it as a possibility, but yeah.
I think that may be the genesis of where this came from, but really where it got embarrassing was when they started to be like, well, we'll also take Freddy Peralta. And it's like, no, you won't.
Yeah, no.
no, that's not how any of this works. Sorry. So, yeah, the Blue Jays thing, getting into the idea, because this is, I joked on Twitter, I'm like, well, so how many prospects do we have to send to the Blue Jays to make this deal work? Because I think most people who look at this, including the MLB Trade Simulator, and I know. It's there's plenty wrong with that thing, but they have that deal significantly underwater, meaning that the Brewers would have to add value to the deal to move it, right? So they have that deal as being significantly underwater, even though, yes, Christian Yelich this year was worth 4.1 wins, and if he was to continue that through the life of this contract, he would obviously be worth well more than the 26-ish he's making per year. But you wouldn't expect that to last. You're gonna see decline throughout his 30s because that's what baseball players do. So you don't expect that to necessarily hold up and last. I don't know. I'm kind of torn about this. I see some logic for the idea that if you really want to focus on, you know, being the best possible team you can be in those years when Jackson Chourio is under very cheap team control, that maybe doing this could make sense to take a little hit right now it could make sense to do it, but I just look at the overall situation. It's like they don't have much money committed to anybody else other than, you know, literally Churio and Yelich. Like, those are the only contracts they have beyond, I guess it would be Freddie Peralta. His contract is over Ashby's, after 24. Yeah. Oh yeah, Ashby, but that's that maxes it's out totally like minimal. $7 million. It's yeah, right. it's not even that much. And Freddie Peralta's deals after 2024 are all options. So that's, you know, that's just a thing you do if it makes sense. So they just don't have money committed here. So I kind of feel like it would be unnecessary to do it, but I can see a logic, especially if and I mentioned this on Twitter, like if they were to say, hey, look, Yelich doesn't really fit our roster because of all these outfielders that we have and our biggest need being power. Like, that's the thing we miss. And that's not Yelich's game. He gets on base, but he doesn't really hit for prodigious power for a corner spot, which is where he's playing. So I could see that argument where they would say, you know, who really fits our roster better is Willy Adames. And if we could unload Yelich and then give part of that money, obviously not all of that money, but part of that money to Willy Adames instead, that I could really see being a powerful argument. But I think you can also do both. You know, the little girl meme, the why not both? Like, I think you can do both of those things, and it's probably fine. So, yeah, I think that this is sort of an intriguing idea, and I would be open to, like, discussing it and seeing what the things are, but I don't think it's something where it's likely to be a major boon to the organization to do it, just because I don't think there's a pressing need to move that salary. They don't have the salary commitments that are, you know, bogging them down the way some teams do.
For sure. Next question, Adam Post, more trade talk, asking, does the Dodgers trading for Tyler Glasnow take them out of the running for trading for Corbin Burnes? So, Spencer, I'll start with you on this one. Obviously, Glasnow, a big addition when he actually pitches. the Dodgers definitely could use probably more pitching depth, because that's really where they ran into trouble at the end of this past year. But do they still have the trade chips to possibly trade for Corbin Burnes if they want to go that direction?
Yeah, I think they definitely still have the ammo to get it done if they decide to go that route. My guess is they're going to go pretty hard after Yamamoto still. I think that's their plan A. I don't know what they, I mean, if I were in their spot, I would still be pretty interested in trading for Burnes, but I do get that they probably want to hold on to most of the other MLB level pitching they have, which is probably what the Brewers would be looking for. At least one of them. They already gave up Pepio. I'm guessing they don't want to give up someone like Emmett Sheehan. So I don't know if it necessarily takes them out of it, but my guess is they're less likely now to trade for Burnes than I would have thought a couple weeks ago. So I don't know which direction they'll go. They can certainly afford to just keep throwing prospects out or signing people, and they'll have no issue with any of that. But I would say that the odds are less likely now than I would have said a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think the biggest reason for that has nothing to do with Glasnow. It's just the fact that Scott Boras said that he doesn't think that Corbin Burnes is going to get traded. This is much more unlikely because of, you know, what is happening on the Brewers' end of things than anything on the Dodgers' end of things. So, yeah, I agree.
I guess speaking of the Dodgers, I want to jump down to the question that we got, because we got some more clarity on Shohei Ohtani's contract in the last week, and it is bonkers. I just thought it was funny. Like, I can't even get mad at the Dodgers pulling this kind of trick, but basically deferring everything but $2 million a year to beyond when Shohei's 10-year contract is over. And then from there, at least for now, he's slated to make $68 million every year in deferred payments. Happy Shohei Ohtani Day every July 1st going forward, I guess. But, you know, it caused kind of a stir in that I think specifically a large market team like the Dodgers pulling this kind of rubbed some people the wrong way. Morgoth10 has a question here asking, I'm struggling what to make of the $68 million deferred each year on Ohtani's contract. Is this good, bad, whatever? better for players or for owners. Ryan, I would argue it's much better for the owners of the Dodgers, just given time value of money and all that stuff. And they can always figure out what to do with that deferment later. But what's your take on that unique structuring?
Yeah, I mean, it's a completely different contract than the way we originally understood it. That's the thing. The $700 million is just, it's a red herring. It doesn't, the contract is not for $700 million in no way, yeah, shape, or form. The only way that it is that is if you're getting hyper-technical about it. And shouts to those who listen to Effectively Wild. They should have overturned it. They didn't. I was just listening before we started here, and they should have overturned the thing and at least just thrown it out, because whatever. If you listen, you know. If you don't, you don't care. So anyways, yeah, this is, it's a weird thing. And there's a couple things to know. First off, Ohtani's the one who was shopping this. It was, right, he made this same offer to the Giants, who apparently, according to Farhan, said, yeah, we'll do it. So it wasn't just, it was like the Dodgers came up with this scheme, though the Dodgers have been trying to do big deferments for a while. This is something that they want to do. And the other thing about this is, people are like, oh, well, what they're going to do is the Dodgers are going to, like, the current ownership group, they're going to sell the team before they ever have to pay this. And ha ha ha, they're going to be laughing all the way to the bank. And it's like, no, because when you actually look at the details of this, starting almost right away, I think it's within a year, the Dodgers have to start putting this money away by, mm-hmm, by virtue of what this contract says. They have to start putting into, like, I'm assuming some sort of escrow account. This money has to, you know, start being put away for it to be there, because it has to be guaranteed for Shohei to stay. So, like, if the Dodgers failed to actually, you know, they're not giving him the money, but if they failed to stop to put it away, that would be a reason for him to get out of the contract. So, like, this is really, it's so, like, hyper technical and very finance bro-y and whatever. And a big part of it, obviously, is there, he's going to get out of paying California state income tax. He's going to move back to Japan, someplace else. He's going to be not in California when he's receiving these payments, and will not have to pay those big California state income tax things. That's a big part of what this is. And also, it's just, he shopped it as this idea that the team would get out of, like, would somehow be able to commit more to the players around him. Though the structure of this, they're still taking a CBT hit. They're still taking a $46 million a year CBT hit, which tells you $46 million a year CBT hit. They're valuing MLB, for the purposes of the CBT, is valuing this contract at $460 million, right?
Yeah.
Which, that's so much closer to what we kind of thought it was going to be originally. The, in reality, this is basically a $460 million contract. So, yeah, Spencer, I, like, this is, I don't think it really affects, I don't think it's better for the players, the owners. It's just a weird, unique situation where the player could do this because he's making so much money through endorsements, and they could structure this deal in this weird way and be able to take advantage of, like, the tax law situation more than anything, I think, you know, is what this is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with everything you said. I was going to point out that they said he's making over $50 million a year in other areas already outside of baseball. So for him to go these 10 years only making $20 million, he's going to be just fine. So, I mean, yeah, you definitely can't blame the Dodgers or Ohtani for structuring it this way. I do think, like you said, it's really not, I guess, good, bad, whatever. It's more whatever. But my guess would be that MLB is probably going to try and get this out of the next CBA. I don't know that they're going to want it to
you
be.
Think?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's been boilerplate language. Yeah, it's been the boilerplate for 30 years, right?
It sounds since like, well, no, it sounds like they actually renegotiated this in the, lately, and they sort of don't. It sounds like they sort of don't care. Like, it's not like he's making more money than he would have otherwise. And the Dodgers aren't really getting around anything here. They're being taxed the CBT value of that contract in real terms. It's just not the $700 million, because he's not actually getting paid $700 million of today's dollars. He's getting paid $700 million of, you know, 10 to 20 year from now's dollars. So I don't know that they, I've heard people say that. I just don't know that what's their incentive to change it? I don't know that they necessarily think this is the worst thing in the world.
That's true.
Also, the contract's name should be Decoy, not the dog. Because that's like the contract was the bigger decoy in all of this.
All right. My Only Lemonade asking next. A large contingent of this year's free agent class has been made up of Japanese, or I guess more accurately, Asian stars. Beyond Ohtani, we've got Yuki Matsui, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Jung Hoo Lee, who's going to the Giants.
And is Korean. And is
Korean, yep. Yeah. And Shota Imanaga.
Ugh, Imanaga, geez, yeah, James. I think that's right. Imanaga.
Yeah. Apologies, Shota, for butchering your name. I'm sure you're listening. I need to pre-read these a little bit better. It's Sunday morning. All right. Anyway, the question here from My Only Lemonade asking, how well are the Brewers equipped to lure players from NPB? My instincts tell me that they're lagging behind in their recruitment effort, and it seems like it could hinder them in the near future. So kind of an interesting question, you know. In the Brewers' past, Spencer, you know, we've had like Nori Aoki, I guess, would be like the biggest name to come over from Japan that I can think of. But also they've, you know, mined the KBO in Korea pretty frequently as well, whether it was, you know, Eric Thames and Lindblom. So I guess, what do you make of their efforts to kind of lure folks over from the Asian leagues, NPB and KBO?
Yeah, I think, like you pointed out with Thames and Lindblom, I think they're probably more equipped to get players from that have already been in MLB or were formerly in America. I think Aoki was, I don't remember exactly how all of that went down, but I know it was kind of a surprise, and it wasn't a huge like story that Aoki was coming over or anything at the time. It was more like, I can't remember what the terms were.
I got you. What happened was the Brewers put in an offer. It was basically like, think of it as a keep it honest offer, like you put in an auction draft. And nobody was more shocked than Doug Melvin that nobody else went over it. And he was like, oh, well, I guess we have Nori Aoki now. And so he became part of the team at that point. And yeah, so that was more accidental than anything. They just put in an offer that they valued him at, and they got him. So it was a different era for how the bidding process worked. Back then it was like the highest bid wins the player. Now the player gets to pick. Right. So it's a very different sort of structure. But yeah, that was more of a surprise than anything else that the Brewers ended up with Nori Aoki.
Yeah, so I guess with currently, I would say if you look at the trend of all of these players coming over from Asia, first of all, the West Coast seems to be where a lot of them prefer to be. I think there's just kind of a reminder. It's a more similar culture to what they're used to.
And time zones too, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Proximity, and then, yep.
Yep, and then just bigger cities, they seem to be interested in general. Like Chicago seems to get thrown out there a lot, New York, but you don't really hear about any other cities that aren't on the West Coast. So I would say if there's, you know, smaller money players that are coming over from Asia, that the Brewers might have a chance, because then maybe they're able to go over, they're able to bring a little bit more in terms of like, hey, we can offer you a little bit more money than these other places if these other places aren't super interested in paying them. But in terms of the bigger names, I would be pretty surprised if we ever see any of them, even if the Brewers were able to offer them the type of money that they're looking for and these other teams are offering, I would still be pretty surprised if they'd be interested in Milwaukee over these other cities.
Yeah, there's something about the idea of going to places, I think, where there's a lot of other people who are from your area. So the West Coast is full of those cities have larger Japanese expat populations, Korean expat populations than other places within the country. One of the reasons that I think that Toronto may have made sense, Toronto does have, I was looking this up when I was looking at the Ohtani, all that stuff was going on. Toronto does have a very large Japanese expat population. That was also one of the reasons that it was cited why Yu Darvish went to Dallas. Dallas has a fairly large Japanese expat population as well. And then obviously big cities like Chicago, New York, Boston, some of those East Coast cities are going to have people like that. But I think one of the biggest things that stops this from being like, besides that, like the player's desire to come here is probably like, what do they know about Milwaukee? Like most, like a lot of people don't know about Milwaukee who live in the United States, let alone people who are, you know, from literally halfway across the world. But the other thing too is just the biggest thing that's holding this up is the Brewers' willingness to spend. What did Jung Hoo Lee get? I think he had $115 million over 6 years to play with the Giants. Yep. And he's never played in the big leagues, and there's questions about how his game is going to translate at all because he has, like, no power whatsoever. So will the slappy approach actually work? Why would the Brewers commit huge amounts of money to unproven players on spec? It's an extremely risky thing that the Giants are doing. And Yamamoto, okay, Yamamoto is a very good pitcher. He's probably one of the 10 best pitchers in the world. And we know that because of looking at like how good his stuff is. You know, you can evaluate that in a way, but you're still talking about a guy who's, you know, never pitched in the big leagues before and you don't know. And you know, the Brewers aren't going to give $300 million to Corbin Burns. Why would they give, you know, $300 million to Yoshinobu Yamamoto? Like, that just doesn't, right? It doesn't track. So right. I think that's the biggest thing is just, like, the big end, top end free agents here are able to command salaries that are well beyond, you know, anything the Brewers' risk tolerance would say, you know, makes sense. So it's kind of the same old problem. Take out the fact that, you know, these guys are coming from overseas. It's mostly just like the same old, you know, free agent thing.
Sure thing. Moving on, Ian Pomplin is asking, the Brewers have been promoting Tyler Black online recently. Does this mean he might start out in the bigs next year? So this is kind of funny because like a couple of weeks ago, we had the conversation on whether or not, you know, the casual fan knew about Jackson Churio and whether the team was promoting him enough. But Spencer, you know, Tyler Black, definitely somebody, he was one of those that got, you know, a cup of coffee in AAA to end this previous season. What are the odds of him starting out in the majors, whether it's second base, first base, wherever?
Yeah, I think there's a pretty decent chance he will. And like we've talked about at other points, like with the CBA and the potential for him to be one of those guys who could compete for a rookie of the year type thing, considering he's pretty much ready and he would qualify for those because he's on top 100 list now. Mm-hmm. I think that gives him a better chance of being in the majors right away, because why wait a couple of weeks if you're going to have him in your plans? I kind of feel like he's just going to make it. I don't know that them promoting him has anything to do with what he's going to do. That's just social media separate from the front office and the people making the decisions. But I do think there's a pretty good chance he makes the roster. And if he does make the roster, I would expect him to be playing every day.
Yeah. No, the reason that you promote him like they have been is because he's close to the big leagues and he's a top prospect. He's, you know, a top 100 prospect. That's why they're promoting him. Reading into what that means for him making the opening day roster or coming up on April 30th. Yeah, I wouldn't read anything into that. That's just totally dependent. I think they're going to want to see what he looks like in spring training and see how ready he is. And if they think he could potentially hit the ground running and come away with some hardware at the end of the season, that would definitely lead them more towards doing this. And also some sort of an extension. I'm waiting to see who is the next extendee. And I think Tyler Black is one of the top candidates for it. Like, yeah, you know, between him and a bunch of the freshmen from last year. So wouldn't be surprised to see Frelick get extended. I wouldn't be surprised to see even like, you know, Bryce Terang on a fairly short small deal, like to just guarantee him money. I could see that happening as well. Really a bunch of these guys you could see getting extended. Robert Gosser, I could see if he were to sign, you know, an extremely Aaron Ashby-esque type deal or even less than that, I could see him getting extended. So I think that's more the interesting, intriguing part of this than anything else.
Next one comes from Corey Diedrich asking, just curious if you have heard anything on Uecker, if he plans on being back next year. I know there was rumors last year that he could be done, but I think that was just people on Twitter being bored.
So I know one person listens. Jonathan Judge mentioned that he was listening to a broadcast and Uecker seemed to be kind of hinting around about it. I don't know the exact wording that was used, but he did say that that was something that it sounded like. And I mean, the man's like 90 years old. So
yes,
at some point, it just gets to be too much, even to just do home games. It's going to be just too much. And so, but no, I haven't heard anything in addition. Usually, I think, when was it last year? It was sometime in like January that they said, yep, Uecker's coming back this year. I think that's kind of what they're doing, is they're waiting to get closer to the date of the season to make the announcement.
Yep. See how he's feeling, both, you know, like mentally and physically health wise, and what he feels up to. I mean, they've definitely built up that radio staff to cover a lot, even if the TV side is stealing levering more frequently with Brian Anderson out of town more often.
I mean, levering is really the lead TV guy now, and Anderson is just the guy that parachutes in for 50 games.
Yeah, and wouldn't be surprised to see Levering move on somewhere soon too, because he's getting some, you know, like Fox basketball gigs. He's really good, and he'll move on probably pretty quickly. But I would say January, February is when we're looking at for the Uecker timeline for sure. Lucroy's suitcase. Their question this week, reading the tea leaves, where do you see TV broadcasts going the next 5 to 10 years as RSNs fall apart? How does it change the financial picture of the sport? Will this lead to big fights during the next CBA? So again, this is something we kind of talk about fairly frequently, especially with the Bally Sports situation. It does sound like in the last week, the league kind of assured those Bally teams again, like, don't worry, you'll have some financial backing here. The contracts are at least good for another year. So for the Brewers, that's great news. But, you know, Ryan, obviously the cable TV bubble kind of burst. And we've talked about how the Brewers kind of unfortunately missed the boat on the timing there through no fault of their own. But, you know, as streaming becomes more of a thing, I guess, how do you see this playing out? And can teams kind of rely on those broadcast rights as much?
Yeah, it's definitely up in the air. So what we know from last week was that there is now a deal in place that Bally's is basically committed, or Diamond Sports, I should say, has committed to carrying through this season, carrying their the Major League Baseball teams. And the Brewers were specifically one of the five teams mentioned in that, along with the Guardians and, you know, three others. So the Brewers have their deal in place. They know that they're going to get that money next year. Beyond that is still very much up in the air. Diamond is trying to reorganize in such a way that they can do this long term and make it, you know, come out with something of this long term, even through their bankruptcy. I don't think that's all that likely. It doesn't seem like MLB is super into that. But I think we know it's going to be Bally's through this year, which, okay, so we're set on that part. And after that, it's definitely going to be more of a MLB-centric model than it is a team-centric model, right? This is definitely going to be coming more from MLB and through MLB Advanced Media and through, you know, the way they do things than having these individual RSNs. But will it ever be completely centralized through MLB Advanced Media and, like, everything is completely, all the blackouts are gone, you can just pay your whatever amount of money for the year to get all baseball throughout the sport and have no blackouts? I don't know that that's going to happen, just because there's so much money involved in, you know, the TV deals, the carriage deals. That really is what drives the profitability of things. Like, people think that, like, ESPN makes money off of advertising. That's much less true than it's more about the carriage fees that they're getting from, you know, whoever you happen to get ESPN through. Those carriage fees are the thing. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch and see. The big problem is, for so long, baseball was subsidized by all these people that weren't watching the games, right? Through their local cable TV contracts were subsidizing people's, you know, the Brewers' finances. And that's less and less and less true every day. And that's going away. So the question then becomes, how much do you want to charge for your product? Because you could set up a barrier to entry and make it harder for your dedicated fans. You're going to lose generations of fans if you're not making it easier for people to get access to your product. And that's the big trick. Like, that's the catch 22 of this whole thing, is trying to figure out how to balance that. And I don't know that baseball has a good answer for it, at least not yet.
I don't know if anyone has a good answer, because this is something, you know, me coming from a TV background, that just plain old networks are struggling with, right? Like, and it comes down to, you know, how often do you at home, whether you have like Dish Network or DirecTV or Spectrum, how often does maybe like your local affiliates have a message up like, oh, we're in a dispute with Dish right now, and they're asking such and such to carry this station? And, you know, this thing becomes more and more common, and it wouldn't surprise me just to see like the networks themselves kind of go away from TV, and just everybody has their own streaming service now, you know? And I think just the landscape of TV in general is kind of adding to the uncertainty here. I have no idea how it's going to play out. I don't think anybody else does, but I think you're right in that like teams should not maybe factor this into their finances as much and start coming up with other ideas. You know, in the last week, too, we saw the Mariners just bought out Root Sports Northwest or whatever it is. So they own their own network now. So whether that's they control, you know, where that goes or all the income, or if they turn around and sell it to MLB like some others did, we'll have to see what happens there. But yeah, it's definitely a situation that's very much up in the air over the next few years. All right, moving on. Devin Bearwolf has a question. How great would it be if the Cubs weren't able to make any significant upgrades and spend the next couple of seasons still playing little brother to the Brewers with Council at the helm? Spencer, I know a lot of Cubs fans in my office are getting impatient, and especially as they see like the Ohtanis and the big names go elsewhere. May also lose Cody Bellinger. So I guess... how satisfying would it be to kind of see them go status quo even after landing Craig Council?
It would be very satisfying. I would be very happy to see that. The only thing that sucks is that Council's always been a guy who can do more with less. So I almost wonder if they're pretty comfortable doing it that way, which this would still be better than he can do more with more too. So I'm fine with it being this way out of the two options, but with Council, I think it is going to be a situation where they probably do play up above what they've been playing, even if the roster didn't change. But if they lose Bellinger and don't add anybody, that roster is significantly worse than it was last year.
Well, and Bellinger and Stroman. Stroman, yeah. Stroman,
yeah. Here. Yep. Yeah, so it could be quite a bit worse if they don't make any real additions. I would enjoy it. I would have a lot of fun watching them struggle for a couple of years here while the Brewers continue to beat them out for the Central. But yeah, I don't know. That's really all I got on that one.
Yeah. So I'm torn on this one between, this is a, do you want them to get what they want, and like take more of it? Because I think that the desperation that is creeping over their fan base might creep into the front office as well. And that would be great, because the only thing better than, you know, not doing anything would be doing a lot of bad and dumb things. Spending and spending poorly might be a boost in the very short term for them, but could really hamstring them long term and put them in a situation where you have an old, bad, aging roster. And that also seems like something I would be interested in for them. So like that would be really satisfying as well, though that comes with a little bit more short term pain, because they probably would sign guys who are good enough to be solid right now, at least. So but yeah, I just wish them nothing but misery and unhappiness.
Next one this week, as we get down to the last couple of questions, Brian Polakowski asking, let's pretend Rob Manfred selected one random MLB podcast for the hosts to all be the commissioner for one day each. What one rule change or more, since you're the commissioner after all, are each of you going to make? Spencer, let's start with you. Day one, what are you going to do as commissioner of Major League Baseball?
Mine would probably not be very exciting. It's not super creative, but as someone who used to throw his entire leg in front of the base as a shortstop or second baseman on steals, I would outlaw that. And I would say that if you can't block home plate, you cannot block the bases once people are trying to slide into second, third, whatever. I feel like that's been a pretty big issue lately with players just throwing their entire leg in front of the base and giving them no area to slide to. So I would probably change that. I would say that you need to give them, again, a lane to slide in, just like at home. I have all the scars on my shin to prove how often I would throw that right in front of the base. I got a lot of outs doing that, but it always felt a little cheap. So that's the one that popped into my head right away when I saw the question.
Anyone who's followed me on Twitter for any length of time knows exactly what I'm going to say right now. And I'm going to do a swear. So if your children are in the car or whatever, I would fucking define what a swing is finally. Like that is my huge bugaboo. Like, let's define what a fucking swing is already, because I am sick and tired of people going, well, I think he went, I don't think he went. And we have the technology to do this now. You can actually do something where it's like, yeah, does the ball break the front of does the bat break the front of the plate? You can do that electronically now and it will be fine. So just define what a swing is. That's like my small picture, like the change I would make to the rule book. My big picture one, and in honor of Paul because he's not here, that would be to outlaw public financing of stadiums within the league and just say we're not, like, at a league level you cannot take public money for stadiums. Obviously this is like the opposite of what they would ever want to do, but
yeah, you would be fired after one day as commissioner,
right? Yes. Yeah. Well, if it's just for one day and I get to do this, and like I get like this is a situation where my ruling gets to stand in perpetuity forever, it can't be undone by later commissioners coming in, then yeah, let's do that one. Like, I would definitely use that more. Like, that would be the first thing I would do. The other thing is more just like a hobby horse of mine that, yeah, I can't stand it. It makes me so mad.
Yeah, I don't know. Aside from wishing for more wishes, yeah. Get rid of the zombie runner, I think, would be probably mine as well. You know, games have moved along pretty quickly just with the pitch clock. I don't think you need both, but everybody seems to like it, so it would never happen. That's probably mine. All right, Steve DeRozier, last one. With the recent announcement of the owners of Johnsonville Sausage purchasing a stake in the Brewers, it seems fitting that we ask the question on everyone's mind. In a sausage race between all of you, who would be the winner?
I would lose.
I've always been slow. Spencer, you're the actual former athlete here.
Former is the important part of that equation, though. I think the last time I ran was the last time I played in a baseball game, and that was we're pushing over a year and a half now. So,
yeah, a year and a half.
Yeah,
you know how long it's been. You know
what was your 60 time? I want to know what your 60 time was.
In my prime, I broke seven a couple times. It was like 6.9 something. But
yeah, you're winning this. That might be a second.
I might be a second higher right now if I had to run one. So.
Noonan has stayed in pretty good shape, I think. I know he does a lot of working out, so I think Noonan would. But I think you'd eclipse him because you've got some years on him. So, I think you win this running away, and I'm just like wheezing at the starting line. So
yeah, I'm pulling a hamstring because I have not stayed in shape at all. Yeah,
the only workout is bicycle and elliptical, not running. Because like some back and knee issues, so I can't really do the running thing anymore. So running in the sausage race just sounds like it would be a wonderful way to get hurt.
Yeah, no, I'd definitely pull a Christian Watson, blow out my hamstring way too easily. So, all right, that'll do it for questions this week. Thank you everybody for sending those in. A reminder: patreon.com/mketailgate. Sign up there for as little as $2 a month. You get that question priority. $5 level, you get those exclusive podcasts for patrons as well. That'll do it for this week. Like we said, not a ton of news, mostly question-based. We appreciate those. As always, they help us get through the off-season in times like these. We will probably, well, I should say we'll definitely take off the next week for the Christmas holiday. So no episode next week, but we should be back with something around the new year, Ryan says. So whether that's news or just a question episode, whatever you want to do. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, kind of the point, right, Ryan?
Yeah, if we have to convene an emergency pod for some major big news, Mark, don't even think about doing another Christmas Eve Jeff Zupan nonsense. I don't need that in my life. Even think about that.
Merry Christmas, Corbin Burns is a Dodger. Yeah, exactly. No, but yeah, barring something like that, we'll definitely take the week off. We'll see you around the new year. Hope you all have a happy holiday season. Stay well, everyone. Enjoy the time off. And we will see you next time here on Milwaukee's Tailgate.